Greetings and salutations, everyone. Once again, I am AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I am the net control operator for this, the Limark Technical Net. Every Sunday night at around 8 o'clock, we all get together and teach each other and learn from each other and entertain each other. And I thank you once again for joining me this Sunday night at 8 p.m. The Technical Net's been going strong for over 43 years. That's a heck of a record, mostly under the great guidance of Dick K2RIW, who unfortunately is a silent key. Let me drop for a second, and I will return with the usual links. Okay, if you want to reach me via email, that would be either for what we used to call mailbag questions or TechNet puzzles that you want to share with me, and if appropriate, I'll share with the rest of the people on the technical net, and usually it's an inspiration to discuss different aspects of science, technology, physics, electrodynamics, if you will. Or if you if there's a technical aspect of the news that you're well aware of and would like to share your expertise, you can email me, and we'll set aside some time, and you can do a short discussion on the subject. Or if you want me to tap Paul on the shoulder and ask him a space or NASA-related story and comment on it, of course, you can directly email him. His email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. But my email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Also, as always, throughout the week, I cut and paste interesting articles, and I put them up on a link page and make them available 24/7. So if you're suffering from insomnia in the middle of the night and you have nothing to read, you could just type into your browser roy.ac2gs.com and get a whole list of interesting articles that I've collected over the week. We also have a chat room available. Sometimes it's busy. A lot of times it's quiet. You get there by typing into your browser chat.ac2gs.com. We offer an audio stream of on the internet of the technical net, and I leave it open the rest of the week. So if you're not in radio distance or you don't have a handy talkie, you can just type into a browser technet.ac2gs.com, and it will give you the audio stream. Also, MikeKC2NJI has a great archive site. It's called AmateurRadio.tv, and he has archived audio files of the Limark Technical Net that go as far back as September of 2006. So avail yourself of the wisdom of amateurs that have either moved out of the area or, unfortunately, become silent keys. Let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you what we got planned.
B2HWW for a quick comment.
Yes, Allie?
To let you know, I'm linked to you guys, so if anybody wants to listen to it over on my machine, they're welcome to if they are in a better range. Just letting you know, going to sit back and enjoy the TechNet tonight.
Okay, very good, Howie. I'm glad to have you aboard. We have Barry from down south on EchoLink. Hello, Barry. Long time no see. I hope you're doing well.
Yes. Okay, very good. Yes, I'm doing very well. Thank you for asking. And I'm enjoying hearing the TechNet tonight from South Carolina. And I'm going to sit back and listen. Have a good night, guys. I'm here. Bye.
Okay, very good, Barry. Always a pleasure to hear you around. Well, it's going to be a vanilla session. Usually I start these things with a short discourse on the latest, greatest AI stuff announced, but I guess everyone is enjoying the holiday season, and there hasn't been that many new announcements in the last week, but I'm sure after the new year, there'll be loads of them, and especially, I think, January 7th, the Consumer Electronics Show will be starting up in Las Vegas, and I'm sure they are going to be using AI as a catchphrase for all their products. So maybe we'll have an opportunity to discuss that then. Anyway, so what we have planned is the usual. I will ask for any questions or comments or topics for discussion, and we will make a list. And I hope people will be available at this time to get their place on the list. Unfortunately, what seems to be happening these days is people kind of come by 8:30, 9 o'clock, 9:30, 10 o'clock, and then they feel as though they've lost their place in the technical net and get a little annoyed. So, I, like everything, you know, show up early, and that's how lines work. So we're going to do that until about 10:15. Paul will join us, WS2N, with the SpaceNet report, which should take us to approximately 11 p.m., and then I will return to tie a bow on everything and wish everyone well for the coming week. That's the plan. If my computer and my shack and the repeater and all the little things that need to work continue to work. So with that in mind, everyone out there, if you have any questions or topics or comments to make tonight, this is the time to get in line. Hit that push to talk. Tell me your call sign, your first name, and what you have available.
And to XGN, for subjects related to ham radio.
West recognized. Anyone else want to claim a space on the line?
KD2ZJK, Kilo Delta 2, Zulu Juliet Kilowatt. My name is Lauren. I have a question.
Okay, Lauren. Good. Let's see if there's anyone else. Anyone else want to put their name on the list for tonight?
Yeah, this is a KE2DFA, and I basically wanted an update about the ISS. Like, the last I heard about a month ago was that there was like some sort of emergency, like they had a leak or something, and then like now I heard everything's fine, but I'm not sure if they like restocked the shuttle or put new people up there or what happened. So I wanted to get an update if possible.
Yeah, no problem. Usually Paul, WS2N, does the SpaceNet report starting around 10:15, and he covers the ISS regularly. So do you have some time to wait for Paul?
Yeah, I could wait for Paul. I just wasn't aware.
Yeah, I understand entirely. Anyone else want to put their name on the list for tonight? Hit that push to talk.
KD2VHD, Jim in Bayport with traffic.
Okay, Jim recognized. We'll put you on the list. Wesley, do you mind if we kind of move the other guys up the list? Because I think theirs are going to be relatively short, and yours usually, you know, takes up some time.
Absolutely. Go ahead.
Okay, we haven't closed the list. People were still able to put their names on the list later on. But we'll start the thing now. Lauren, what's your question for tonight?
Okay. I was talking with two esteemed colleagues earlier in the day, and I was saying, well, you know, we know the length of, we know the, you know, how, the length of a wave, say a 20-meter wavelength is about 65 feet or so. But what's the width? What is the width of a wavelength? We know how to measure its length, but do we know, is it a fraction of an inch, a 16th, a millimeter? Is there a way to compute it? Any info you have would be appreciated.
Okay, it's an interesting question. It's a novel question. The problem is that when we talk about wavelengths, we're not really talking about physical objects. we're talking about mathematical constructs. Because that, otherwise you'd have kind of problems about, well, if you give a electromagnetic wave a physical dimension, how does that correlate with a photon, which is pretty much dimensionless? So the point, though, is that, again, when you talk about RF waves, we're talking about mathematical concepts of amplitudes and sine waves and going through space-time and such. So in reality, if you wanted to know what the physical characteristics of an electromagnetic wave is, that they, in real terms, they're dimensionless. So they don't have a length, they don't have a width. The electromagnetic wave has a mathematical construct that has a wavelength where the intensity as it goes through time reaches peaks and valleys. So for all intent and purpose, the width of a radio wave is zero. It has no physical dimension.
That's interesting. But why, okay, but let's say, you know, certain, you know, frequencies do better going, using within a building. Say, you know, you want to use, what, UHF rather than VHF when you're setting up communications within a skyscraper or something. So there has to be a width to it. It has to be a theoretical width to it. Otherwise, there wouldn't be an advantage of using one over the other, right?
No, that doesn't carry at all. Different frequencies have different amounts of energy and respond differently to materials. At some frequencies, electromagnetic waves are transparent, glass. Visible light goes right through glass. But if you increase the frequency of the electromagnetic waves and the energy that it carries, it's opaque to ultraviolet light. So the characteristics of absorption, reflection, and scatter and such are not due to any physical dimension of waves. They're about the photon itself, the energy level that a given photon of electromagnetic wave has, and how it interacts with matter. Different substances have different properties for a different energy level electromagnetic photon.
But if it has a theoretical length, why can't it have a theoretical width?
You want to give it a theoretical width? I guess you can. It doesn't really mean anything. Again, because there's nothing really going on in that dimension. And, you know, again, it's theoretical. It's not a practical physical quantity, again, because you can just as easily talk of electromagnetic waves as their particle carriers, photons. And then you have all kinds of problems. You know, photons don't have width, don't have height, don't have length. They're dimensionless objects. There's a lot of dimensionless objects in quantum mechanics. It gives everyone a headache. And there's theories behind electrons possibly being dimensionless point charges. The physicists still argue that. But as far as things like photons, everyone that I know kind of describes them as point force carriers, so they don't have. So I think it's very useful to have theoretical lengths for wavelengths because of the way that the wave amplitude undulates through space-time, but I don't think width really gets you anything.
Okay. Interesting. Interesting question, interesting response. Thank you very much. KD2ZJK.
You're welcome. You know, I mean, I don't think anyone has ever asked that before, so I always like new questions. It gets into quantum mechanics. Some people kind of feel uneasy about that, but, you know, what the hell. So thank you very much, Lord. I appreciate it. It was a very interesting question. Any comments out there, feel free.
Comment with me.
Okay, Wesley?
I was shocked. That is so beautiful question. So beautiful question. Photon doesn't have a size. So photon is the carrier of electromagnetic energy. So that would be the shortest way to describe it. But electromagnetic wave, it's a mathematical amplitude, A in sine shape, that represents the strength of the electromagnetic field and the rate of its variation in time and space. So sine shape doesn't actually mean geometric shape. An amplitude does not mean a deformation like elastic waves. Back to you.
Yeah, it's a theoretical model to make it easier for people to deal with electrodynamics. But at the end of the day, electromagnetism is not, in the physical sense, a dimensional object. It's intrinsically dimensionless. It's a force carrier point that has no dimension traveling through space-time.
B2HWW, you want to comment?
Certainly, Howie.
If you take a wave, say a 20-meter wave, and you are in a mobile and you're driving, you're going to find out that there's going to be values and peaks. Now, if you go to 10 meters, you're going to find those values and peaks are closer to each other, the higher the frequency. Also, you're going to find out if you go to higher frequencies, it tends to get into places easier because the wave is smaller. So if you're, let's say, on 2 meters in a mobile with a handy-talkie, now you go to UHF, your signal has an easier time getting through the openings of the car. Number two, what about a capture effect? If you were to take, did you to talk about the capture effect, the size of the capture effect, I forgot what formula, man, I wish Dick was alive, he would know this, he would have an answer to this. Go ahead,
Well, a lot of times when he discussed capture effect, the capture area is independent to the length of your antenna, which some people get headaches when they think of it, because usually he used capture area and capture effect in the same way that when you're discussing minuscule antennas, that you can theoretically build a antenna whose dipoles approach zero, and by adjusting the impedances, you can effectively have it resonate electronically, if not mechanically, and its capture area would be almost identical to a full-size half-wave center-fed dipole. So I think that's when he was alluding to that. But again, all these things are theoretical based on electrodynamics. They're not actual physical objects that possess those dimensions. So we use it to make life simpler for ourselves and let us calculate all these things, despite the fact that the actual photons themselves, which are the force carriers of electromagnetic radiation, do not have an intrinsic dimension themselves. Their characteristics can be described as having dimensions, but their actual stuff that makes them up don't have dimensions.
Correct. But you can also use H2. You can find the energy content of a waveform. Now, is a photon, you know, does light have energy? We know that. Is it a wave or is it a wave front? And all these stuff from all kinds of engineering stuff. All right, just making that comment, and you're absolutely correct.
Thank you, Howie. Yeah, I mean, obviously, photons do have energy. They have momentum. These light sails that every so often that Dick used to discuss, NASA was planning to fly objects by using a solar sail. So that shows that photons have momentum, and it's because they don't have any rest energy, but they're always traveling at the speed of light, so they contain energy, and different frequencies have different amounts of energy. As the frequency goes up, the amount of energy each photon possesses increases, and that changes its characteristics when it interacts with other things in the universe.
I don't want to comment except H2, which is a minus 27 Earth. I forgot what that formula was. So, okay, I'm going to stand by.
Okay, yeah, that's a very famous equation of the relationship of frequency of electromagnetic waves to energy that it contains. You know, if you destroy a photon, energy cannot be created or destroyed. It can only be changed. So it would mean that you have to account in either some other form of energy or possibly even mass for the destruction of a photon.
Is it minus 27? I forgot what the number was. All right. That goes back to mechanics. So, all right. WDHWM.
Okay, very good, Howie. Thanks again for participating tonight. Wesley, you wanted to say something on the subject?
Would you mind to say something about the vectors of electromagnetic waves?
Okay, it has an intensity and it has a direction. Electromagnetic waves just don't sit there. They travel at the speed of light in the vacuum. The direction is sort of dependent upon how they came into existence and what's interacting with them. So a photon traveling has both a directionality and a amplitude. So it's a vector. Einstein, I think, used the tensors to explain electromagnetism.
Yes, absolutely. But we may also say about B as electric field vector, B as a magnetic field vector, and we may also go to pointing vector.
Yeah, a pointing vector is just the direction that the electromagnetic wave is propagating in that direction.
Okay, so we don't have a physical dimensions, a width of electromagnetic wave. We have a direction. It's longitudinal factor, or isn't it?
Dimensionless objects can have directions. There's nothing stopping a dimensionless object from having a direction. The two don't kind of correlate with each other. You know, there are things that obviously do have dimensions, a proton, and if you have a fast neutron, it's going someplace at a fast speed. And neutrons have dimensions because neutrons are not fundamental particles, which are probably all point particles. They're compound particles made out of two down quarks and an up quark and some gluons. So put them all together and it gives you an actual physical dimension. And so, you know, dimensional objects can have vector directions, but dimensionless objects can also have directional vectors.
Okay. Is it parallel to the direction of propagation, or is it at right angle?
It depends what you're talking about. If you're talking about a pointing vector, the vector of a pointing vector is in the direction of its propagation.
Okay, so if we direct electromagnetic wave straight up, be the right angle?
There would be more than one right angle. You know, I mean, anything at a right angle for, you know, 360 degrees would be all right angles to the pointing vector.
Mr. Roy, you are amazing. I love you. And to XGN, thank you very much.
You're welcome, Wesley. Next on our list is Jim. You had something to tell us, Jim?
I had a question. I recently became aware of a product, a simple product, lithium AA cells, I guess AAA, but I'm specifically talking about AA cells, that are sold on the market as, I guess, disposable and replacement for alkalines, with the greatly added advantage that they say they don't explode in your equipment. And their price point versus their energy content seems to be hitting a useful curve. I'm curious, is this a waft of a breeze going by, or is this a change in the product? Things like backup batteries for HDs and a million other things, but if that is a valid claim that they're making on these products, they might be something that's worthwhile to have some of. Any knowledge would be on that product line would be appreciated. Back to that.
AC2GS. Okay, Jim. They've been around for a few years. They're kind of all over YouTube. The lithium, it's basically a standard operating lithium chemistry battery. So, you know, it still is cautionary. You know, you can't just kind of throw them in the garbage, and they're theoretically as likely to start burning as any other lithium technology. The novelty of this particular design is not the chemistry, as far as I am aware. What they do is you can't really use a lithium battery usually as a replacement for a AA or AAA, because AAs and AAAs are 1.5 volt batteries, and lithium ion, each cell is 3.6 volts. So you need some way of getting it down from 3.6 to 1.5. And the way that they do that is they insert a small circuit into the battery form that that transforms the voltage from 3.6 to 1.5. And some of them have USB ports that you can plug in and recharge the lithium ion battery. Some of them require a separate charger. If you look at the voltage output with a very good oscilloscope, you will notice that it is not an extremely smooth 1.5 volts. There is a very, very slight ripple in the voltage because of the converter from 3.6 to 1.5. I haven't heard any reports that this screws up electrical equipment, but it does a little bit concern me that at some point, somewhere, sometime, you'll plug it into the wrong thing, because although it's all over YouTube, I don't know how much saturation it has with regular consumers. That there's got to be some circuits that just won't be happy with that small amount of ripple. So that's primarily what I know about it. People use it, people buy it, people like it. The only gotcha is that little ripple when you run it in an oscilloscope. If anyone else has more experience, please feel free.
UB2HWW, would a comment on this subject?
Certainly, Howie.
I understand that when you try to use these in an AM radio, like a portable radio, you will hear noise. They do generate noise. It is a switching supply. Frequency is going to be a high frequency because the capacitors are super small. Also, if you try to run it into a handy talkie or something, might cause noise on the transmitter because, you know, you've got some kind of ripple on the DC signal. But for most electronics, you probably wouldn't notice it. But if you got it on a transmitter, like a transceiver, like a handy talkie, I know that it would cause a problem.
Okay, good to know. I didn't hear, you know, I've heard a lot of comments about the technology, but I haven't really heard anyone have problems with it, so it makes some sense. Again, when I saw the ripple, it concerned me a little bit. I don't think they're good candidates for handy talkies and such, because if you trade in your high voltage, high current load, rechargeable batteries for AA or AAA, you end up with a much less powerful signal on the final amplification. So I think there's some kind of sensor in most handy talkies that if they see a bunch of 1.5 volt batteries, be they lithium or anything else, they're going to cut back the power handling capacity. So although it's probably good for things like flashlights and other things that you need a AA or a AAA, I don't think they're a good candidate for ham equipment, anything that transmits. It requires a significant amount of power output.
This is the K2DFA. I had some comments about the lithium batteries. The first one is I heard that you need to have the LIFB PL4 certification on them, because like if you don't, apparently if they get any sort of moisture that they'd explode. I've never seen a YouTube video of them exploding those, so like I don't know if they would do it. The second one is, I did watch a video recently about them, solder the connectors to these batteries. You would, I believe it's a welder that uses, like a micro welder that you weld the connectors on. And I'm not sure much about it, like I don't know if when you weld it, you do like make these batteries explode or if it's dangerous or anything like that.
Well, I don't know about that particular welder. As I said before, the chemical technology is lithium. I wasn't quite sure if it was lithium ion, iron phosphate, iron sulfate, or if it was just lithium ion. But, you know, you have to give it the same respect as any other lithium battery and be careful with it. And you can't just throw it in any garbage can, and, you know, all the same things to keep in mind with this particular technology. It's just primarily a way to fudge lithium battery technology into a 1.5 volt AA or AAA form factor. It's not as efficient as a full-size lithium because you have to take volume away for the voltage correction circuit that's built into it. So, you know, like I said before, it's an interesting new design. You have to keep in mind that it's a lithium battery and treat it like a lithium battery, and you have to keep in mind that although the ripple isn't severe, there's still a little ripple voltage potential going through the output. So if you have something that's very sensitive to any kind of overlay of a ripple on your DC, then you should keep that in mind.
Frequency is the ripple at?
I would assume it's the switching frequency, in the kilocycles.
And the problem you're going to have, let's say with an FM transmitter, you superpose a ripple like that on a synthesized radio, let's say the switching frequency is 10 kilohertz. You're going to have a carrier at 10 kilohertz. So, you know, if you have somewhat of a ripple, you might cause problems to chasing channels.
Yeah, but I mean, switching power supplies can be as fast as hundreds of kilocycles. Again, I don't remember seeing any YouTube video. They were all kind of promoting them. It's difficult to say whether they got paid off or what the heck's going on there. But although I would be concerned with the ripple, and you're concerned with the ripple, rightfully, you know, the YouTube videos really didn't make much of it. So I wasn't able to kind of learn any detrimental effect of having that type of power correction going on.
I just remembered that with a switching supply, that ripple may be way, way down. Look, everything has a ripple. I mean, even a 120 cycle power supply with a full wave bridge rectifier, but it's far, far down. Okay, you know, what's the percentage of that ripple? Okay, if you're dealing with a 1.5 volt battery, and you say you have a 50 millivolt ripple, that 50 millivolts is a bigger percentage. If you had a 50 millivolt ripple on a 20 volt power supply or a 300 volt, so or a 12 volt power supply, so you know it's all there. If I take a scope and put it across my air front, I'm going to see a ripple, probably microvolts. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's very possible. I mean, well, you say everything has a ripple. Everything that's started as an alternating current or has a power regulator has a ripple. A normal alkaline energizer battery doesn't have a ripple. It depends upon the magnitude, and not even so much really the relative magnitude, because the circuits that are affected by, you know, 10 microvolts, 100 microvolts, they don't really care whether your initial power supply was 1 volt or a billion volts. They're just concerned about the intensity of the ripple that's kind of fluctuating around them. So, I have not seen any evidence that this ripple has any detrimental effect to normal equipment, but I have not also seen it thoroughly tested. So it might there might be sensitive things out there that don't like it, but I don't know. It's just conjecture because, again, everyone on YouTube seems to be promoting the darn thing.
Okay, you know, I know that they cause interference to AM radio, so they will generate hash across the AM broadcast band.
Okay. Well, caveat emptor, let the buyer beware. Probably it wouldn't be a major expense if someone is interested in it to buy a small supply of them. You know, if you can't use them for radios, you could use them for your flashlight.
Interesting feedback. So use for our things is subject to question. Use in simple things is less of a subject to question. Is the claim that they will not blow up and ruin your equipment when you leave them in storage valid or a leap?
It's a bit of a leap. I think if memory serves me, they tend to use lithium iron phosphate rather than lithium ion or lithium polymer. And lithium iron phosphate is considered to be somewhat safer than ion and the plastic lithium chemistries. So it's a little bit of a fudge. It's safer than lithium ion, but it's not as safe as alkaline batteries.
They seem to be advertising that their great advantage is they won't, you know, corrode and leak and do that thing that alkaline batteries do when you come back 5 years later and your equipment is melted down and everything is corroded and unusable. So are we saying that that's not a valid claim? I would imagine that could be true. But I just wanted to know if that's what we're saying.
No, that's a valid claim, but I mean, in this world, if I had the choice of coming back and finding a gook on my battery and having to clean it up versus a battery that spontaneously explodes, I would consider the ones that just kind of leak gook to be annoying, not dangerous. So that advertising is correct. That is a flaw in the chemistry of alkaline batteries. You know, you could buy the most expensive alkaline batteries out there, and it's an intrinsic problem that they all have. So you might have a slightly better quality battery, but in the end, you know, I've tried Duracell, I've tried Eveready, I've tried just about every name brand alkaline battery, and I've seen them go bad. So, yeah, but again, I'd rather an alkaline go bad than a lithium go bad, because the consequences are significantly different. I'm sorry, but I can't understand you. You're about 90% noise at some times, and occasionally you just fall out of the repeater. So if you can kind of change the orientation, if you're dealing with a handy talkie on a whip, or if you could crank the energy up, if you're at a base station, try and give us a little bit more power to the repeater.
Okay, I'm on now. I was saying that I recommend it for some like a power pack for charging the cell phone, but it's probably not a good idea to install it on the radio.
You're better off with a standard lithium battery power pack than you are with something that drops the voltage from 3.6 to 1.5. There's really no reason to kind of, you know, kind of go in both directions. You know, if it's the USB power pack, you got to kind of get it up past 5 volts. So you're using something that's innately 3.6 volts that you could put two cells together and get above the 5 volts with a voltage regulator, but instead you're gonna submit it to voltage reduction of 1.5 and then put 6 of those together to get it above 5 volts in a voltage regulator. So that would probably be the worst way of using those AA's or AAA's. Like I said, you know, small electronic equipment, flashlights, maybe remote controls, things like that, stuff that doesn't have too many sensitive RF circuits in it that can kind of have problems with a ripple.
WB2KW3.
Yes, Kevin.
Okay, we seem to have been on the subject of batteries. I'm wondering, how does one dispose of batteries? Sometimes they are regular batteries, sometimes they are alkaline, sometimes they're rechargeable. If you look it up, it just says, you know, look to your local, environmental protection, whatever. Is there a general place that one can dispose of batteries?
As far as I'm aware, unfortunately, no. I believe that if you call up the sanitation department and ask them, they might suggest that a couple times a year they have organized these places that you can throw away your electronic equipment and hazardous material, but nothing is really kind of written down in stone, if you will. So it's not like you can call the sanitation department and say, I would like to throw out 5 pounds of lithium ion batteries. Can you schedule me with a pickup? Unfortunately, the sanitation department isn't going to work like that. So I think what happens, unfortunately, 99.9% of the time, is people just throw it out in their regular garbage and don't really think about it much. Lead acid cells are this kind of the same way. You're not theoretically supposed to just throw out your lead acid batteries. You're supposed to take them to places that either reclaim them or dispose of them in a safe manner. But I think 95% of those people probably just throw them in the garbage.
I somehow recall that a lot of auto service places have signs that say that you can bring auto batteries to them. Now, I'm not sure if it only involves the purchase of a new battery or what the deal is, but I recall seeing those signs.
AC2GS, yes, I've seen them as well. I think the theoretical understanding is that they should be available to anyone. If you didn't buy a battery with them, if it's not exactly an automobile battery, you know, if it's a lawnmower battery or anything like that, that theoretically they will accept it, and they probably have some arrangement with companies that that turn them over and rebuild them to functional batteries. So there might be a small financial benefit for them. So that's one place you can certainly bring your lead acid. As far as I'm aware, they will not accept any other technology other than lead acid, though.
WS2N?
Yes, Paul.
Yeah, I took a battery that would, well, normally be used for a tractor, for instance, lead acid, back to AutoZone and give it to them. I didn't buy it there, but, you know, they will take them back. And on top of that, if you give them a battery like that, they'll give you a $10 little gift card, you know, as long as you spend it in AutoZone. So I thought that was pretty neat. Back to you, Roy.
Yeah, that's very nice to hear. Again, I believe, I don't know if it's universal, but there is companies that will take old lead acid batteries because, you know, lead is lead. You could reduce it back to its native elemental form, and you could use it as the basis for next generation of lead acid batteries. So there's, to a degree, there's a small profit to be made, and part of it, that also is probably just sheer promotional genius on their part, but it's good to hear. Yeah, lead acid's relatively simple. There used to be opportunities to go to consumer electronics stores, and they would accept your electronic garbage because you can't throw that away either, just regularly in the can. I don't know if they still have that. Unfortunately, through the years, the consumer electronics stores have kind of faded away, and they've decreased the benefits that they used to offer. In the old days, you know, Circuit City and the other bunch would take away your old flat-screen TV for free. Now I think they charge you something semi-ridiculous like $100. Anyway, Jim, hopefully we gave you some things to think about. Again, I found it a kind of a fascinating new type of battery. I'm always into technology, although I never quite got around to ordering a couple off of Amazon to play around with. But again, I don't see anything inherently awful about them. You know, just another permutation on lithium-ion batteries.
Well, thank you for exploring the subject. I find it interesting. I didn't realize that there might be some RF issues that need to be taken into account, and that's interesting. So I'm still, it's an open question from what we've been saying about the use of it for, like, flashlights and such. I think the operative theory I'm thinking about them is that most risk analysis involves how likely is it to occur, like the battery's blowing up, and if that does happen, what's the extent of the problem? And I think I'll avoid them for now and keep learning. Thank you, Roy. I appreciate you exploring the topic. Back to that. WRK, KD2VHD, clear.
Okay, very good, Jim. Thank you for participating and bringing up the subject. Yeah, I found those batteries somewhat fascinating. You know, the lower the current capacity that a battery has, usually the less dangerous they are. You know, you get these e-bikes and such have a good amount of you know, electrical power capacity, and so when they go bad, it's like sending a flare-up into the sky, whereas if it's a triple or quadruple A battery, you know, it might be like a kind of wet firecracker. But caveat emptor, everyone, they are lithium, and if you buy them in Amazon, I'm willing to bet you anything that the package will come with that lovely little safety sticker to be aware that the package contains lithium. Okay, very good. Thank you, Jim, as always, for participating. Let me just ask out there, is there anyone who has any comments about any of the things we talked about recently? Okay, then I guess it's your turn, Wes.
Thank you very much. Okay. This is November 283, Juliet, November. So we have a full subject related to ham radio, and the first one would be Ulefone, U-L-E-F-O-N-E, 20WT. Ulefone 20WT. So, imagine that you have a phone, right? But that phone is also capable of DJI Fly App, so you could have your drone operated. You have a phone, you have a camera, you have a Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, thermal imaging, night vision, satellite messaging, walkie-talkie, DMR, and ham radio. Okay. So, previously, last week, I was talking about different guys trying to make some money. They were also on Hamvention, presenting some radios, but the services were not necessarily existing and whatever, whatever. So, now we have a device that serves to, let's say, DJI drone controller with 50 megapixel camera, 5G telephone, camera, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, thermal imaging, night vision, satellite messaging, walkie-talkie, and DMR. And it works with All-Star. So, and it gives you navigation and positioning, works with GPS, GLONASS, Galileo, Beidou, I don't know that the system supports digital compass, and it has proximity sensor, light sensor, gravity sensor, acceleration sensor, geomagnetic sensor, gyro sensor, column counter, pedometer, air pressure sensor, NFC, and 1-watt speaker audio power. And yes, I saw the video, this power, the power, especially in the newer version of it, which is Armor 26. So it is the same company, but the radio course is called Armor 26. It's ultra walkie-talkie. This audio is really amazing. Let me drop. Okay. The price was different in many different places, starting from 600 up to 700 and change. So not a bet, some guys from Hamvention, they were trying to sell the radio for $1,500, similar to that, and whatsoever. And I hope that Dr. Roy had a chance to review that material, and I wonder if he has a questions, comments about it. Dr. Roy.
Hey, C, C2GS. Yeah, I have a lot of comments. I'm not impressed. You know, I mean, if you really think about it, a lot of the things that you're mentioning are because it's an Android phone. All Android phones have a DJI Fly app. All Android phones have a phone. All Android phones have a camera. All Android phones have a Wi-Fi. All Android phones have a Bluetooth. Thermal imaging, I'm not quite sure if that's real or imaginary. I have a dongle to plug into my iPhone that gives me thermal imaging, so theoretically my phone does thermal imaging too. And, you know, satellite messaging, again, I would kind of check that out and see how legitimate that is. I'm sure it's not a sophisticated satellite system. So all it really, once again, is an Android phone that has an extra circuit board that does DMR, UHF. And it's thick and bulky, and I wouldn't really use it as a cell phone because it would take up too much space. And I wouldn't use it as a handy talkie because it's too expensive. So, again, I'm not impressed. You know, we've sort of seen variations on this theme for a couple of years. I wasn't impressed the first time I saw it, and even bringing it down to $600. It's a no-name phone. Olaphone to me is nothing. If it breaks, you just have to take a plane trip to China to have it fixed or something. There's no infrastructure in the United States as far as I'm aware. So, you know, it's a pig in a poke, I think.
I agree with that, and the price right now for this, leased it, this website of the manufacturer is $699.99, so we're talking about $700. The next one, upgrade ICOM 7610 to 7760. That's interesting, because 7760 is not available yet, or it was shown at the Japan and Hamvention or Ham presentation, or how you call it, and it is amazing radio, and everybody is auch and ach, and I would love to have it. So I decided to touch the basis about, is it worth to upgrade 7610 to 7760? Plus, I mean, if somebody has 7700, that radio is different, but 7610 and 7760 has absolutely almost the same front panel. The only difference is that in the new one, 7760, you have a 200 watts, you have an all HF plus 50 megahertz, and you have a separate console, or remote head, how you call it. And then, because Dr. Roy has a flex radio, let me drop. Okay, the flex radio has a remote head, which is called Flex Maestro. And then I compare that with the, I believe, much more eloquent, I would use this word, head of the new IC7760. And then I have a question, because it makes me think about benefits of having a flex SDR radio if the price tag is not so much different. And I wonder what Dr. Roy says about it. Maybe somebody else researched the subject too. Dr. Roy.
Hey, C2GS. Okay, I mean, I'm not a big fan of the Maestro. The Maestro was the kind of first way that you could remote into your 6000 series Flex radio. They really ultimately what they did was they didn't do a great job. They basically took a kind of a laptop computer and the guts of it at least, and they stuck on a bunch of physical knobs and dials and such, and then the video screen shows you the rest of the things. The original Maestro had this one incredibly stupid flaw. They did not want to supply a power supply because they thought it was going to take too much time and they would have to get it through FCC. So they sold it without a power supply and they